This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noel Lim. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday the 12th of January. And ordinarily, I would have said, it's just a normal Tuesday, but it's not really, considering the announcement that we had from our Prime Minister last night. How do we feel about that this morning, guys?
I feel like it's a repeat of last year, and I feel like, oh, I think there we go again, a whole series of lockdowns. I think the question then is how much they're going to enforce it, right? Mm. I mean, when we say roadblocks, is it going to be on the way, for me, on the way to work, that kind of roadblocks? Because in the last few months, there were no such roadblocks, right?
Yeah.
But during the MCO, the height of MCO last year in March, there were that roadblocks.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there will be roadblocks, because in order for you to really kind of, I think for this to be enforced, you're going to have roadblocks somewhere around. I hope it's only for 2 weeks. I hope this is just simply a circuit breaker to kind of stem the tide that's currently being, that's facing the healthcare infrastructure. And they don't do this whole 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks again, right? Like at least Singapore last year when they did their circuit breaker was, all right, guys, it's 1 month, or other countries did 3 months. Because the economic impact from something like this is significant, and we don't want this to keep dragging on, right? If businesses don't know how long something's going to stretch out for, they may lose hope or something like that. So that we don't want that to also become an issue.
Yeah, so this is something that we'll be watching closely and, of course, bringing you updates throughout the show and as we get them ourselves as we head into the start of this new MCO 2.0 tomorrow. But in the meantime, we do have a number of things lined up for you in this next hour. After the 6:30 news, what do we have, Noel?
Yes, at 6:30 is international news. So we're looking at Trump again, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and also something about Trump's demoralized staff.
Interesting stuff. Okay, so that's going to happen after the 6:30 news. What else do we have?
Well, towards the end of the hour, we will take a look at the local papers and portals, but closer to where we are right now, we're going to be talking about leadership and leaders who do work behind the scenes. And spoiler, we're going to be talking a bit about Nurul Izzah as well. So that's happening in about 10 minutes.
And if you want to weigh in on these conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're going to be talking about the subject of procrastination, aka the thing that everyone struggles with. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. That was Pat Benatar with All Fired Up. And are you guys all fired up to fight off procrastination this morning? Because that's what we're going to be talking about.
I need to delay that.
The answer is no.
Too bad we can't procrastinate on the MCO that's happening tomorrow.
Can we schedule this for tomorrow or maybe the day after that?
All right. Well, we are going to be talking this morning about procrastination because it's something that I think everyone struggles with in some way, shape or form, right? Most of us aren't chronic procrastinators, but there are our producer Shazana Mukhtar is nodding at me to say that we are chronic procrastinators. You know, such is life, right? There's always that unpleasant thing that you have to do that you wish you could put off for an hour, 2 hours, a day, maybe. But sometimes it's better to get things done over with and quickly, right? And how do you get yourself motivated to do that when you're facing something unpleasant? Well, the BBC has an interesting article about this. Tell us about it, Roshan.
It is. They're writing about this this cutting edge research done by Jason Wessel as part of his PhD at the Griffith University in Queensland. And he's essentially targeting the psychological, instead of dealing with the symptoms of procrastination, mm-hmm. he's going for the root, the reason behind it. And he's come up with four simple reflection points. and these are supposed to target the root problem. Now, already I'm feeling a bit, we'll see how this goes, right? But the four reflection points essentially come down to these four questions. How would someone successfully complete the goal? How would you feel if you don't do the required task? What is the next immediate step you need to do? And four, if you could do one thing to achieve the goal on time, what would it be? This is perfectly fine, actually, because it creates a lot of consciousness about what you want to do, and it creates a sense of like clarity around the task at hand. And yes, it will help you beat procrastination. My bigger question, though, is what's going to stop you from procrastinating on answering these four questions? That's really it, right? There are so many systems out there that say, oh, this is how you beat procrastination. But what if I procrastinate on the steps to beat procrastination? Then we're stuck in an endless loop of
Never getting anything done.
Yes, I think you just give up and I'm just going to have an ice cream instead, right? I think what has worked for me is having regular prompts, like either you schedule it into your calendar and then it prompts you to say do this, or you set your daily schedule the day before or on Sunday for your week ahead. Or thirdly, for me, I think a reward. So like, okay, to motivate myself to exercise, I'm going to have that cheesecake after that.
Mm.
Yeah, so, you know, people will say, what's the point, right? But I think you have to start somewhere, you know, motivate yourself.
No, but I have to ask you though, what stops you from just skipping the exercise and having the cheesecake anyway?
No. You have to be honest. You have to be accountable.
So you have an honest system going on with yourself.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So which brings me to this point. I think the final point where he says, you know, you mentioned there were four causes, right? And he said the last one's metacognition, the self-awareness and capacity to think about our way of thinking, right? And I think this comes down to like mindfulness, being mindful of our mind patterns, how we tend to resist certain actions or how we tend to shy away from taking certain actions, especially, and that will lead us to procrastinate.
Yeah, for me, looking at the prompts actually that he's written down that you listed out for us, Rajan, is quite useful because a lot of the times I find that when I procrastinate, I'm very focused in the now. Like, I don't want to do this now. Can I do this tomorrow? I don't want to do this now. One of the questions that he asks is, how do you feel if you don't complete the task, right? And then once you start thinking about that, then you start to realize that actually it might be better to just get it over with. And then you stave off, then you don't feel that guilty feeling that you know you'll have if you don't complete whatever it is on time.
So the first thing then is then to write out these four things. I'm going to read them again. How would someone successfully complete the goal? How would you feel if you don't do the required task? What is the next immediate step you need to do? If you could do one thing to achieve the goal on time, what would it be? You need to write these four things down somewhere if you feel like you want to try this out and put it in a very obvious place, right? You want it to be a very obvious cue. Because if you don't think about it, if you're not aware, again, awareness is so key. If you're not aware, and this is not a habit that you're asking yourself right now, it's not going to be something that you actively ask yourself tomorrow morning.
Yeah, and I think awareness as well of the time that it's going to take you and the awareness of maybe how much time you give yourself. Because sometimes I find that it does help. Okay, look, it might take me a little bit of time to psych myself up to whatever task it is. I'm going to give myself 10 minutes. And you have to be honest about with yourself about that 10 minutes. But then once that 10 minutes is up, you know, there's always going to be that little awareness in the back of your mind that, okay, I have to do this in 5 minutes now and then I'll start. And then 2 minutes and then I'll start. It helps to psych me up to doing whatever it is that's unpleasant.
Yeah, so after that four questions that you ask, right, it might actually trigger a fifth question. Is the question would be, actually, do I need to even achieve this goal? And then that's when you start to prioritize and then you get less overwhelmed, right? And then maybe hopefully you will procrastinate less.
Yeah, and I guess that also brings into the equation, the value, right, of what you're doing, what's in front of you. Because sometimes procrastination can stem from the fact that, hey, you think like, do I really need to do this? And you're not really aware of what's really going on there. And I think one of the key things that I procrastinate a lot, is laundry. I tell myself I want to do it once a week at least. I tend to do it when I have no more clothes left.
I'm not sure how I need to respond to this.
The thing is, it's such then I realized at that point, I regret procrastinating, right? Because it's the typical cycle. You come to that point and you have no more clothes left and you're like, okay, now I have to wash everything.
Yeah, so, otherwise your colleagues are not going to talk to you, right?
Correct. And then now you've got 2 weeks of laundry, which is going to take two loads to wash. You've got to dry all of this and then you've got to fold it and put it back in the cupboard. It's a whole painful ordeal. What I just started doing, just putting the laundry basket in a more obvious position so that when I'm leaving my room, I look at it and I'm like, yes, I should probably do this today. It has helped out of 2 weeks of this year, successful 2 weeks out of two. So we're on our way somewhere.
Very good. I mean, it's therapy, right? It can be quite therapeutic just putting your laundry and then taking it out and all that.
I don't know. I have associations with doing big loads of laundry all at once because I used to do this in university as well because, you know, you procrastinate, right? And then you have a massive load and the machines in my university dorms were terrible and could only take maybe a third of my laundry at any one time.
Goodness.
And it was a 20-minute walk to the
laundromat. And I thought these university washing machines tend to be huge, right?
Yep.
industrial scale.
So this is something I think that all of us clearly have our struggles with and have found methods to complete. But do let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 01878988899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Tell us how you stave off procrastination. Right now we're heading into some messages and then we're going to be looking at the subject of leadership. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Lonely Boy by The Black Keys, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noelle. 6:18 in the morning, Tuesday the 12th of January. And yes, there was an article that came up yesterday in Malaysia Kini that actually spotlighted Nurul Izzah. So she's the Permatang Pau MP and obviously daughter of Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, formerly a very popular common face of Malaysian politics, now a lot less so. So her appearance yesterday at the launch of PKR's PKR Youth's Young Professional Bureau caused a lot of questions over whether this would signal her return to politics. And she said, no, actually, I've been doing, you know, work in the behind the scenes. And she said that actually it would be better if more leaders did this sort of work behind the scenes. Apologies, this was published on Sunday. But of course, this raises the question of whether or not it is better to have politicians and have our leaders be less visible, perhaps in the public eye, but of course, this is predicated on the assumption that they are busy doing work for their constituencies or their parties.
I think it's okay for her to sort of stay behind the scenes because she already has a latent huge following, right? Just looking at her Instagram, for example, I think she has 790,000 followers. Having said that, Niloufar has 8 million followers. So, you know, maybe Nurul Izzah may want to reconsider her strategy. But in any case, I mean, she's considered the princess of politics. I cannot say that the same for, you know, the lesser known politicians, right? If you're not visible, if you're not talking, you know, giving comments in the press, then you will just die in that unknown politician grave, right? But I think what's important here is what you are communicating, right? You can communicate or you don't want to communicate, but what's important, what are you communicating? Is it about just jockeying for positions? Is it about wanting to be prime minister? You know, all that's not very helpful. That's not helpful narrative for us right now.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned here because end of the day, like you mentioned, Noelle, Nurul Izzah already has a following, which is why she doesn't have to maybe shout out loud the things that she's doing in the background. But a lot of younger politicians need to get their name out there, right, one way or another. And I think an interesting litmus test, or at least something to observe, will be Muda's own politicians, right? So yesterday was Monday. We spoke to Syed Saddiq yesterday, and when we asked him whether he was looking to bring in other politicians into the fold and all, or whether he wanted to grow in-house his politicians, basically. He basically alluded to the fact of bringing in business people and all, and then helping them become politicians. So let's see whether they can grow their own followings, right? Because Syed Saddiq is arguably, he's got social media presence. He's got a name out there already, but he was a Perdana Fellow and he worked with the various politicians. So he has been in the game for a little while there, and he has some very powerful mentors. Let's not forget Tan Sri Muhyiddin and Tun Mahathir. Both were, he was very close to. So let's see how his cohort of budding politicians do and whether they can make a name for themselves.
I think it also depends on who your audience is, right? Because if you are a lesser known MP, a lot of the times probably your priority is going to have to be your constituents. And as an MP, it should always be your constituents, no matter really how big you get. So at the end of the day, you know, if we don't hear anything on the national front, but your constituents are confident that you are doing the work for them, they see you around, they see you holding town halls within their constituencies that aren't necessarily trumpeted out to the press, then that's good, right? That works for you and for the people. I also definitely do agree that it really depends on what you have to say, because We have here in Malaysia this tendency for politicians to use the national press as a forum for disagreements. So politician A will say, hey, politician B doing something not particularly bright. And then politician B will say, you go and look at your own constituency, don't stick your nose in my problems. And this fight will happen across all of the media portals and papers. And I'm like, what's the value of that, really? Aside from aside from bringing everyone into your dirty laundry, that's not something that is of value to the people. It's not something that shows that this is the state or the federal government is moving forward with policy.
What if it's entertainment value to the people, Lynn? What if it's entertainment value?
Yeah, it's entertainment value for us, but then maybe for the politician, their image, their reputation, not such a great thing. And one person that comes to mind is Mas Lee, our former education minister. So unfortunate to be caught in all that crossfire. Mm. I mean, I think he had really good intentions, but you know, people just remember him for certain measures now. Whereas our current education ministers, the higher education and the education minister have, you know, they're actually quite quiet. Mm. They don't go out and make major pronouncements. Now, the upside is that they don't become a target of criticism. The downside is, does it inspire any confidence?
Yeah, and I guess when it comes to the question of entertainment value erosion, you have to ask the question of what are politicians there to do, right? Are they there to further the interests of the people, or are they there to provide a good spectacle?
Yeah, that is the question, right? That is the existential question of our time. No, it's not. They're there to represent people in parliament, to execute the duties of their office. Mm-hmm. At least in theory, that's what they're supposed to be doing. And I mean, we hope. But at the same time, right, when we take a look at politics in Malaysia, the cult of personality is so powerful. Oftentimes, true. You win because your name is very big or your party is very powerful. You can't win if necessarily, if you look at Prabhakaran, who won Tian Chua's seat in the last election, I wonder whether it was simply because it was an anti-Barisan national sentiment back then, but also because Tian Chua in the end of the day came in to support him, right? And that was an interesting example. But generally, independents don't do very well unless you are, even if you're super close to your community, there is still a certain air of you want to be part of the federal government or you want to be part of a much bigger party that it has a lot more going for it. You have your own branding has to be very, very, very strong in order for you to, I guess, go against the grain of a much bigger name or personality party.
So judging by your number of followers, if you just look at Instagram as an indication, Syed Saddiq has 1.8 million followers. I think Nurul Izzah about 800,000 followers. So, you know, we hope that we'll hear more of her. I'm sure she would make some sensible statements. It would be a shame that, you know, she just disappears off from politics.
And I wonder which of the young politicians comes close to equaling Niloufar's 8 million Instagram
8 million,
followers?
Yes, yeah. She should go into politics.
All right. Well, let us know what you think about this. Do you value a leader better if he or she is less visible or operates more behind the scenes? You can WhatsApp us 0187898899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, we're about to head into the 6:30 news. And to take you there is Oasis with Roll With It, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was California by Phantom Planet, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. It is 6:40 in the morning, Tuesday the 12th of January, and we're looking at what's been occupying the international news overnight. And of course, the continued saga is what's been happening in the US, because now it appears that the news reports are saying security fears could build up as we head into Joe Biden's inauguration next week. So this is on the back of the fact that obviously we had the riots at the US Capitol that we saw last week, and the situation with President Donald Trump also appears to be escalating, with Democrats calling for his impeachment. And there's been a lot of unrest as well, I think, that's been recorded on social media, which prompted big platforms like Facebook and Twitter to completely remove Donald Trump off of their platforms.
Yeah, so just looking at some measures that the government will be taking, I think the Secret Service has planned to lock down most of central Washington, D.C. on the day before Biden's inauguration on 20th January. And I think they are proceeding with some security preparations. Apparently, 15,000 troops may be sent to the city to beef up security. And but you know what's amazing about the US, right? After what happened, not only security being beefed up, of course, we wonder why it wasn't beefed up earlier. But you know, companies are now banding together to say, look, any lawmakers from the Republican side, if they're going to object certifying the election results, they're not going to give any more donations, right? And so some of the companies that have done so, I think Marriott, the hotel chain, they've come out to say this, including also Facebook, Google, Microsoft, as well as JP Morgan. They are saying they're suspending all political giving for some amount of time, as they don't agree with what's going on. on the Republican side.
Yeah, so just the caveat that would be that companies like Facebook or is it Microsoft, they're suspending just all donations, right? Mm-hmm. But there are companies in particular, like I think AT&T, who have their spokesperson said that their PAC will suspend contributions to members of Congress who voted to object the certification of the Electoral College last week.
So Airbnb did this as well.
Airbnb and I think, who's the other company? I seem to have lost their name right now. But yeah, so there are a lot, some companies have suspended all contributions, and when we think about the political contributions in the US, a lot of times you think about just the presidential races, but it's not just that. You've got senators, congressmen, city council people. It's so widespread. And this is where a lot of the money comes from, private companies through their super PACs and things like that. So this is going to be interesting to see because oftentimes we always say, the best way to get something changed is to affect the money flow, right? So we'll see how that works. But, you know, coming back to that security issue, right, Noel, that we were talking about, there is more concern coming up because, in fact, Homeland Security has designated the inauguration on January 20th as a national security special event. And following this, this was from the acting head of the Department of Homeland Security, Chad Wolf, who has since exited Homeland Security. So leaving that department in a little bit of a mess right now.
He exited earlier, right? He had already planned to exit earlier.
Yes, but I think he only resigned yesterday.
Last week.
Yeah. Did he resign last week? Then the order must have come from... but in any case, the Homeland Security Department, which is in charge of things like this, is in a bit of a headless chicken situation, right? Which isn't the best thing heading into it, especially because the FBI is expecting armed protests in all 50 states by right-wing extremists.
And not only corporates are putting pressure on lawmakers, I think even the New York State Bar Association, they're launching an inquiry into removing Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, from its membership. So, you know, I think what some of these institutions are saying, enough is enough. You know, we need to restore democracy, and they are using their power and their influence to make that happen.
Yeah, but I guess with something like that, it'll be very, very important for the justification behind the bar doing something like that, right? Like they have to come up with a proper paper. Like Twitter said,
oh, they will have the committee.
Yeah,
and
they'll have to
go
right,
through their due diligence.
At the end of the day, the social media companies did all these different things. This is why we're removing Donald Trump. And even that, they got so much backlash from, I think, European counterparts, European lawmakers who were saying, well, the act of free speech is down to lawmakers, not to the companies themselves, which is a different approach Europe has than the US does, right? End of the day, the companies do have the right in the US to regulate what's on their platforms.
But if President Donald Trump does lose Rudy Giuliani, it'll be another, just yet another pin toppling in terms of his staff and his former loyalists, because the White House current and former officials have said that President Donald Trump's White House is in meltdown as it limps through its final days, particularly since Democrats also plan to introduce an article of impeachment against Trump it's going to be today. So many White House staff members are obviously upset and embarrassed by turns of events and are potentially even eager to move on. So I wouldn't be surprised that they've been facing criticism from even their own peers over this.
Yes, and I'm sure they're worried about the damage that's going to be done on their reputation and job prospects, right? And most of these people would rely on some speaking circuits. Would people even want to invite them to come and speak? I mean, what are they going to speak about? And do they even have the moral leadership to talk about, you know, anything?
Yeah, and the House has, when we speak about all this situation and where this could go, the House has introduced, we talked about it yesterday, how they would be introducing, and they have introduced an article of impeachment, and they plan on voting on it this week. Democrats have charged President Trump with inciting an insurrection after a mob spurred by the president attacked the Capitol last week. And the House plans to pass a resolution calling on Vice President Mike Pence and the cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Trump from the from office. The House could also choose to delay sending article of impeachment to the Senate, as it would not be able to hold a vote on convicting Trump until he leaves office in 8 days. So just things to keep in mind.
Yes, indeed. And we're going to be taking a closer look at this move to impeach Trump later on at about 7:30 with Catherine Dunn-Tempest, Senior Fellow of the Miller Center at the University of Virginia. So be sure to stay tuned for that conversation if you're interested in knowing more about what's happening in the US. But right now we're heading into some messages, and then up next, more local news for you. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. That was Diana Ross with Upside Down, which I think really should be the theme of this past year or so, considering what we've all been undergoing. We're going to undergo starting tomorrow, because we're looking at the front pages of our newspapers and portals.
When people and papers come together. Papals.
Yes, papals.
Brought to you by BFM.
Newspapers and portals this morning. And of course, the front page of, I think, everything is talking about the re-imposition of the MCO version 2.0. The Star actually has on its front page a good breakdown of the do's and don'ts under this movement control order. Very necessary, I think, considering how much confusion has abounded since yesterday evening.
Yeah, so the obvious one is, I think we were also anticipating this, was no interstate and no inter-district travels for those states under MCO. And those states are Penang, Selangor, KL, Putrajaya, Malacca, Johor and Sabah, the red, the more red areas. But I think here, NSC brings to fore this, they spoke to some experts, vaccination experts, and they actually feel this 2-week MCO is insufficient. The cases we are seeing now are the result of infections 2 weeks ago. So we only see results after 4 to 6 weeks and a sustained decline after that. So this is their view, that 2 weeks is not enough. But I think, you know, Muhyiddin's is in a tough spot, right? I think he needs to appease the business communities. At the same time, he needs to balance out the needs of the healthcare system. So I think 2 weeks sounds like that compromise. But I think it's safe to expect that 2 weeks is not enough and we will still have to expand for another 2 weeks.
Yeah, who here thinks that at the end of these 2 weeks, we're going to see another 2-week extension?
Oh, certainly be.
Can I not comment on this matter at this point in juncture? No, but you know, sometimes, especially with the way things are, I mean, I understand the need for a circuit breaker and I completely empathize with the economic and business impact this is going to have, right? I mean, on the front page of the Malaysian Reserve, the government, the headline here is government urged to extend financial aid to sectors affected by MCO 2.0. And this is the Malaysian Association of Hotels CEO Yap Lip Seng, who we've had on the show a few times. And I mean, it's no secret, the hospitality industry has been hit hard by the pandemic. And just as they were seeing some resurgence over the last few weeks because of interstate travel, they've been hit again. And they're essentially imploring for the wage subsidy of 50% for employees with a pay of up to 4,000 ringgit to be extended, as well as a 30% subsidy for those earning between 4,800 and 8,000 ringgit. Because if not, they're going to have to start looking at retrenchment, right? They've held out as long as they can. And I think even if the government says it's going to be 2 weeks, it's just like how you two are expecting it to be longer than that. I'm sure there are other people out there who are like, oh, this is going to be the same thing like last year. Every 2 weeks, it's going to be another 2 weeks and so on and so forth. Why not just do something like Singapore and just say, hey, it's going to be for a month or so and leave it at that? Or just, you know, or you know what would be great? If you said it was going to be 4 or 6 weeks and then after 4 weeks, like, hey guys, tomorrow we're going to turn this off because things are better than it was. Overpromise, underdeliver is not the way you want to go. Underpromise and overdeliver always delivers results.
Yeah, so I think, well, it is a difficult choice, right?
Oh, no one is saying it's not difficult, yeah, but so, you know, yeah, this is so the I think it's about, sixth MCO or something like that.
Yeah, but I think the main thing here is, okay, you want to do an MCO, but you need to provide clarity. And this thing about why is there SOPs, why is that only coming out at 5 p.m., right? It's not like we've not done this before. You know, why can't they just say, okay, refer to that guideline, the current guideline.
Isn't there a Google Doc they have that they just need to amend and then just pass it on?
It's just, you know, just... you're talking about execution and implementation here. I think that's where this key, that's the problem, right?
Yeah. I mean, they have really some guidelines, right? At the end of the day, things like only two per household are allowed to head out for purchasing of groceries. Roadblocks will be mounted. Movement limited to 10 km radius to people in a vehicle. No interstate or district traveling. No social gatherings such as weddings, receptions, religious processions, including Thai Pusam, which will be affected by this, I think. Mm-hmm. Meetings, seminars. So these are all that they have listed some things. But I think it's the details that always matter in situations like this, and they matter the most to the businesses because they have to operate or not operate. They don't know how much they can they operate during this time.
Yeah, so I think some very broad guidelines have been given, like no interstate travel, yeah. And then you use some common sense there, right? But at the same time, companies are fearful, right? Mm-hmm. And we know sometimes our rules can be a bit unreasonable and not clear, and then, you know, it depends how the enforcers enforce the rules, right? So no companies want to break any rules because they don't want to be penalized. So I think that's really the main concern here.
That's what worries me, right, Noelle? It is whether or not, you know, okay, we the public don't necessarily have a lot of clarity on the details and the specifics of the guidelines, but it's important that those who are enforcing those guidelines have that clarity, because there has to be uniformity in how this is rolled out across the country. And we didn't see that during the MCO and the CMCO. So has that been remedied this time around? I mean, it's been a year almost since the first MCO.
Great, Lynn. Perfect time to switch topic a little bit. Very quickly, I just want to touch on this other headline here, that the PMO had to come out and say the PM was not sick and rumors on a DPM were false. And this was news that was circulating yesterday, that Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin was needed treatment, and that there was the impending appointment of Dato' Sri Hishamuddin Hussein as the DPM. And we will be talking more about this in about half an hour, I think, with Dr. Hamidin of the Ilham Center, right? Research fellow there. So that's happening at 7:15. So be sure to join us for that conversation.
Indeed. But even though Tan Sri Muhyiddin isn't sick, apparently who is Datuk Sri Rina Harun, who is the Women, Family and Community Development Minister, who has joined Tokpa on the list of COVID positive patients. So we wish them, of course, a speedy recovery. But right now we are heading into the 8 o'clock news bulletin. And here to take you there is Living Loving Made by Led Zeppelin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.